Good evening and welcome to Rangers Rundown, the only Rangers podcast where every night is Dollar Dog Night. I'm your host tonight, Mike, and with me I have Hayden.
Hello, everyone.
And unfortunately, Max won't be joining us tonight. He's attending a candlelight vigil for Keone Kella. It's really bad. He's taking it really hard. Saw him with the black armband earlier today. He'll recover, though. So, Hayden, you're up to the task. You up to the task to do it without Max tonight?
Yeah, we got this.
All right. Well, then let's get right to it. First thing we want to talk about is recapping the series with the Diamondbacks, where some interesting things happened with the trade deadline happening about the same time. On Monday's game, we had a nice victory.
Real nice.
Martin Perez, it was a very Perez-like performance. On a positive note, he only gave up one earned run. On a negative note, he gave up four runs in total. He's got that ERA down to 6.50, so
goodness.
I think he's pitching just good enough that he's going to get re-upped for 2019. What do you think?
Well, that's the question, it's like our fourth or fifth episode was basically me ranting about Martin Perez and how awful he was. And, you know, I mean, he does deserve the benefit of the doubt, I guess, because he did have that pretty serious injury that supposedly was causing his ineffectiveness. At that point, I thought that we would not renew his option. I looked at his stats compared to Derek Holland, whose option we didn't pick up. And I don't know. I don't know if there's a number where you can say if his ERA is this or that, then we'll pick it up. I think that the odds are that we probably will. I think that there's a pretty good chance that we probably shouldn't. But I don't remember what the dollar amount is for his deal next year. Do you?
I do not. It's still small though.
It's pretty small.
I know that. It's very team friendly.
It's like $7 million or something.
And I'm afraid that the Rangers are going to, you know, kind of go along with the adage of it's better to be with the devil you know than the devil you don't know.
Right.
They know what they've got with Perez. He's consistently mediocre to bad, so we just really need a caretaker at one of those pitching positions to just eat up some innings and see us through until 2020 when we'll be World Series contenders, right?
Yeah. So his option next year is $7.5 million. It does not say here what his buyout is. I think
it's low, like $500,000 or something
I
that.
I read that it was $750K. Wait, here it is. Yeah,
okay.
It is $750K. So we're making a $6.75 million decision on Martin. I think we probably keep him around because I mean the upside is still there. As frustrating as he is. The upside is still there, I think. I'm not going to... Like, if this was a better team going forward, then I would... You know, we don't really need him, but it doesn't hurt to give him at least 20 starts next year, probably. Because, as frustrating as he is, I don't think that he's as bad as he was. Like, his true talent level is not what it was earlier this season. And when you're not trying to win the World Series next year, probably, you know. Because then again, if he turns it around for $7.5 million, then you're happy about that. And then we also do hold an option for him for $9 million. So, I mean, and he's only going to be 29, so maybe you're thinking that something clicks, he enters some kind of prime. I don't know. It's worth a shot, especially with, you know, we're not talking about a Cole Hamels $20 million option. We're talking about less than half of that, so... I think we do pick it up, but I think that is one of the most kind of interesting major league storylines to follow, because most of the stuff that we're watching is positive. You know, can Maz and Gallo take a big step forward and DeShields be a starter and you know, continue to play good defense? But kind of the big picture, maybe on the, like, looking for the negative lining in things is, will Perez pitch himself out of a cheap option? And, you know, it's... I don't know what the odds are, but it's pretty close, I think.
I mean, I personally have... I jumped off the Perez bandwagon, gosh, at least 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Praying for him to go away. Yeah. I just... he shows flashes of brilliance, but he just frustrates the heck out of you because, you know, he's a typical guy that he's out there on the mound and something goes wrong behind him, a bobbled ball or a throw that wasn't quite made, and he melts down, and there's four runs, you know, where he's having a perfectly good outing. It's just, you know, I hate to say it, I think it's one of those guys with a million-dollar arm and a five-cent head. That's really what that's how I feel about him. But he got the win. Offense looked good, you know. Home runs were being hit left and right. Chu got two of them. Odor got one. Just a lot of RBIs. They look like the offense that we want them to be.
Yep, just churning.
And that's the thing that gives me a lot of hope for next year and the coming years is that this team, they know how to score runs. And you can't just say it's all, you know, veterans, because there's hardly any veterans left on this team. So, you know, don't know what the score is tonight, but they'd already scored 10 runs by the end of the second inning tonight. So there they go again. Welcome back to the ballpark in Arlington, Andrew Cashner. Yeah.
Yeah, that one's come back to roost.
So then Tuesday's game happened, and I guess I should say on Monday's game, Kella didn't come out for the ninth. Diekman pitched the ninth, so we'd already seen the last of Kella, and then that was the last of Diekman because he was gone shortly after the next day.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, right before the deadline.
Yeah,
it was
so
it was surreal watching it kind of break while the game was going on that Kella was going to Pittsburgh. Because for one, okay, Pittsburgh, I guess you can have Kella if you want him. But also just it's weird because it's like happening before your eyes on the field. Like Kella is not in this game because he's not on the Rangers anymore. And we drafted him in 2012 and developed him and dreamed on him and hoped that he could be a closer. And we love him and we love his fastball and he has a hammer breaking ball and it's awesome. And he's young and he's fiery and that's our guy. And we have a lot of good memories with him, especially in Toronto. And like, that's it. That's a wrap.
Yeah. Yeah. I think of the three of us, I was the saddest to see him go. I mean, early on, if you go back to some of the podcast we had, you know, a few weeks ago when we first started talking about potential trades, I was the one that was most depressed about the potential of losing Kella, but I made peace with it, and we'll talk a little bit later in the podcast about who we got for Kella and what that means for the future, but wish him nothing but the best.
Oh, yeah.
And
he's going to look awesome in black in Pittsburgh, I think.
Yeah.
Give me that.
And I told you, one of my best friends is a Pirates fan for God knows what reason. But, you know, by proximity, I may root for them a little bit this year.
Oh, yeah.
They're kind of fun.
And Clint Hurdle is their manager. I still have good memories of him.
Yeah. So that was good.
Yeah.
And then the next night happened. Mm-hmm. You know, Colon was on the mound on Wednesday night. And if he had won the game, he would become the winningest Latin-born pitcher in Major League history.
No kidding.
Alas, he did not.
He'll get him next time.
He was very big sexy. Going five innings, five runs, seven hits, couple of walks. Yeah, he was just... He was very Bartolo.
Yeah.
And,
never go full Bartolo. Isn't it crazy?
And unfortunately...
Isn't it crazy...
Unfortunately,
that he... He almost pitched a perfect game in Houston like 2 months ago, 3 months ago. And now this is definitely the new normal. Is five innings and like four home runs and he probably will lose.
I think he was probably pitching a little bit over his head as he was reaching. I think made it very clear that the Juan Marichal, that record, that meant the most to him.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's great if he can beat Dennis Martinez, but you know, I think the heat could be getting to him, and he could be getting fatigued. I mean, the guy's old.
He's
still out there taking it every fifth day.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
Just one more win.
Just one more. He'll get
it. And unfortunately, Arizona's pitcher Godley, he pitched an ungodly performance, only giving up two hits over seven innings. So we didn't really have a shot. However, There was one bright spot I think we want to talk about, and that would be the debut of one Jeffrey Springs.
Yes. Yes, let me pull up my tweet here real quick. It's one of my better tweets I've had on the internet.
I would agree.
Yeah, and I got a weird response to it, which like I'll accept, but it was also weird. But it's also a weird tweet, so there you go. Loading. Okay, it says this. If you don't think I pause the game in order to take a shower and then get in bed with a glass of red wine to watch Jeffrey Springs make his major league debut, then I just don't know what to tell you. So, Springs, honestly, I don't think I had heard of him until this season. Started out the year in Double-A Frisco, had an excellent K per nine rate, was really overmatching hitters over there. Got promoted to Triple-A Round Rock about a month ago, I suppose, and still continued to do well. Some of his kind of basic numbers like ERA and stuff like that are kind of inflated due to some pretty nasty outings. Kind of when he blows up in a big way. But typically he's pitching scoreless innings and he's striking out multiple guys while doing it. So super excited for the Rangers to have a guy that, well, wait a minute, like on, he was striking out 16 per nine or 17 per nine or something like that. Just unbelievable number. And the Rangers, of course, if you've been following them lately, we had Yu Darvish, which is great at strikeouts, and Cole Hamels was doing pretty good this year. Kella's pretty good, and gosh, man, but as a like as an aggregate, our staff is last or near the last in all of baseball in strikeouts, and so the potential to have a just a major swing and miss guy in your bullpen was I just eat that up. So, anyways, I paused the game and got real comfortable and watched his outing, and he delivered a beautiful performance. He pitched two innings, gave up one run. He walked the first guy he faced on four pitches and also threw a wild pitch. So he definitely was nervous. But you could see his pitchability and his pitch IQ. He was locating that fastball, which I was stunned to see. His hangs out between like 90 and 92. Because this is the first time I saw him pitch too. And he wasn't throwing extremely hard, but he throws a crossbody from the left-hand side, spots it up wherever he wants, and he plays off of his pitches really well, including a slider and most notably a changeup that he made Steven Souza Jr. look like a fool. It was awesome. He threw two straight swinging changeups, threw a throwaway fastball, and then just threw a fastball by him for strike three. I'm really excited about Springs. I am the lead boat in this fan parade. What I'm most excited about is just like to see the plan that he had while he was pitching. That was really, really fun to watch him just go all over the quadrants, you know, spot the fastball up outside, come back inside with it, bury the slider on right-handed hitter's feet. Just had a really good plan, and that changeup plays to both sides of the plate as far as like against lefties and righties. So I'm definitely going to not just like be excited about him, but watch him pitch, because it's not a Kella fastball hammer. It's like a changeup inside, fastball high, slider at your feet, fastball away, you know, weak contact or strikeout. And it's good. I could say a lot more. But Jeffrey Springs.
Oh,
30th round pick. It's 30th round.
Yeah.
From 2015. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of those lottery guys. Yeah. You know, I think we've got a lot of lottery guys in the minors right now. And it's encouraging because there's a lot of these guys that could potentially work out. And this is the very first sign of the changing of the guard on the pitching side post deadline. So, I think you're going to see a lot more. I think you're going to see some guys like maybe a Brady Feigl getting a chance.
Definitely.
You know, I think they may bring up a Sadzek.
I think so,
because,
too.
I mean, they've got to see what they've got with him because he's out of options. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're going to see some more of the younger guys. And it's something to get excited about. We know it's a lot of the results are going to be bad, but they're going to give you flashes of brilliance, a little bit of hope. And then we have all these new shiny toys to talk about.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting. So tonight, what we thought we would do is just give you kind of a brief scouting report on the pitchers in the minors that they brought back. We're not going to talk about the guys that landed on the major league roster because those aren't really prospects. They're just kind of placeholders. So first guy we want to talk about is Taylor Hearn, which is one of my favorites. He came over in the Kela trade. Mm-hmm. This is a local guy. He grew up in Roy City. He's 23 years old. He's a tall, lanky left-hander. He's 6'5", 220. I saw a lot of 210s out there maybe a year or two ago. Maybe he's putting a little bit of extra weight on that body, which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to happen. Some interesting things about this guy. He's got some neat connections. His grandfather was the first African-American to attend Oklahoma State on a rodeo scholarship. And he was also the first black Marlboro man, which I think is just totally awesome.
Pretty cool.
And the rodeo thing, it runs in the family. Taylor, he can actually rope and ride, but he gave it up at age 17 just to focus on baseball, at least on the competitive side. From what I read, he still does it, just doesn't do it competitively. His other claim to fame, so to speak, is that he's currently dating the daughter of Arthur Rhodes,
which is super cool.
Former Ranger great, was with us back in the World Series years, back in 2011, I believe.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of cool. So the thing that excites me about this guy is just he can bring the heat. You know, yep. The scouting report on him is that he's regularly pitching at 96 to 98 miles per hour on that fastball, but he can touch 100 if he wants to. He just, he's being told to kind of hold that back. He's got a plus change that's really exciting, and then he's got a slider that is progressing.
Yeah, that's what I've read too.
And they're saying that's going to be the difference for him on whether he ends up being a starter, I hope.
Gosh.
Or if he ends up being, you know, one of the back end of the bullpen guys. It's going to be, you know, when I say back end, I mean the late innings guy, a setup guy, or a closer.
Deepman.
Yeah. Yeah, a Diekman or even a Kela, mm-hmm. You know. Bringing that kind of heat, you only need a couple of pitches, you know, in one inning. So,
yep.
So that's what I'm hearing is his floor. His floor is that he's going to be a bullpen closer prototype. So if you traded away Kela and the worst thing you did is you just got a younger version of Kela, you did okay.
Left-handed Kela, you know? That's a little plus for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. Yeah. And, you know, we got the ominous player to be named later, which is going to be a recurring thing.
Yes.
And so it remains to be seen. From the teases that I've heard from John Daniels, you know, at least a couple of these players to be named later are going to be some significant guys.
Yeah.
Some of them are going to be throw-ins, lottery picks, you know, a bag of magic beans, mm-hmm. that you hope for. But I think a couple of these guys are going to go, wow, okay, let's regrade John Daniels on what he did at this trade deadline,
yeah.
Because I think he did okay.
I think definitely. And that's kind of a bigger discussion on the trade deadline as a whole. With all of these players to be named later, but yeah, back to Hearn. I was really excited reading about this guy. It's like I was waiting for the other shoe to drop, because I don't know. Maybe I'm just used to prospects always having flaws. You know, whether it's Gallo coming up, but he strikes out all the time, or Guzman is good, but he doesn't have any power, and that probably won't stick at first base. You know. The Rangers special this year is, yeah, he's a really good pitcher, but he just had Tommy John surgery, or, you know, something else, and it's just okay. Well, he's leading the league in his league in strikeouts and in opponent's batting average, and has a WHIP of under 1.1. He's left-handed. He's tall. He's young. He's a Texan. I'm like, well, awesome. I'm glad he's on our team. So
yeah, and he's a local legend.
Yeah.
I mean, in Roy City, they actually retired his number 21 jersey. Roy City High School did. They had a ceremony, and the mayor actually designated February 23rd as Taylor Hearn Day. So mark that on your calendars. We're definitely going to celebrate. Maybe a get together of listeners of the pod. We can get together and talk about Taylor Hearn all day. I very much look forward to that.
Yeah, yeah, and look forward to seeing him pitch. I think he's going Friday, so
yes.
In Frisco. And I don't know. So that first off, if you can go, that would be awesome to go see him pitch. I don't know if we might try to bump him up to AAA. Probably not. But I don't know. There's still
you never know.
Like another 5 weeks or so left in the minor league season, since he is doing so well, you might want to just give him a little boost, because I think that there's a chance. I've seen ETA as 2020, but I think that there's a chance, since he's been so successful, and just based off of his age, and you would expect at least for him to spend significant time in AAA next year. Maybe he gets to go up to the majors next season. So I think that might be possible. Might start that kind of turning towards the upper levels or AAA, maybe at the end of the year. But definitely go see him on Friday if you can.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's going to depend on Taylor himself. Mm-hmm. He's going to make his own destiny, because if he pitches really well next year, who knows? He could be an August call up after they mm-hmm. make some more trades at the deadline.
Yep.
At the very least, I think he gets a September call-up next year. So, you know, unless he just really bottoms out. But I don't think anyone is expecting that. So,
yeah. So
good things, and welcome to the team, Taylor Hearn.
Yeah.
So next up, we want to talk about Raleigh Lacy.
Yeah,
So you Lacy. Take the reins from there?
Yes, I will. So Lacy came over from the Cubs. He's the kind of, at least as it stands right now, the first player, the kind of the headline-ish player from the Cole Hamels trade. 23 years old, from A-ball, kind of a high-ish strikeout guy. He's got 94 and 80 innings this year so far. Throws a lot of ground balls. The projections that I've seen from multiple places put him as a long man, or kind of an up-and-down middle relief kind of player, which is still promising, because that's at least a major league grade. And he's just, to me, there's nothing super exciting about him. I mean, he's, let me see if we have his, well, he's 6'4". I mean, that's not short. He does have good strikeout numbers, good ground ball numbers, but nothing that is super electric, like a, you know, high 90s fastball from the left-hand side. He is still only an A ball, so, you know, he's a long ways away. But again, kind of somewhat, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. He just seems like a pretty modest and, you know, kind of a robust prospect of a guy that you're glad to have in your system. You're not mortgaging your future on. He's not a Hans Kraus, but he's a guy that, you know, might definitely has a shot to make it to the majors. And that's kind of the state of the team right now, is loading up on those guys that have a shot at making it to the majors and seeing what happens.
Yeah, and some other good stuff happening with Raleigh is that this year he made the All-Star game for the first time in his career, so he's trending upward. He also, just last month, was part of a seven-inning no-hitter. He threw five innings of no-hit ball in that performance. So,
pretty cool.
You know, yeah, definitely. I mean, he's going up against top competition and doing well against them, so there's definitely some hope there. Maybe not quite the pedigree of a Taylor Hearn, but definitely right there.
Right.
So the next guy we want to talk about is going to be Wei Jie Wong. I hope I got that pronunciation correct. That's what I read online. This is a guy. I probably know the least about him.
Yeah, he's just interesting. In a couple different ways.
He's, tell me.
Well, I mean, first off, he's Taiwanese, which, you know, there's not a lot of those guys running around on the minor league circuit. He was supposed to be a starter and is not one anymore. I guess that's somewhat more common. I think he has to be added to the 40-man this year, too, which is kind of weird. But don't quote me on that. Maybe you know that.
He is. Okay. Only Hearn and Wong are Rule 5 candidates this winter.
Okay, so
all the rest that we're talking about are not, is one of them.
So there's kind of, it's weird, because he's had quite the journey from Taiwan so far, and like his numbers don't necessarily indicate that he's ready to make it to the majors, but we kind of have to add him to the 40-man roster, so cool. All right, let's see what you got, Wei Jie.
I think he's got some intrigue. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
He's averaging.
That's the good side of the interesting. It's like, kind of the bad side is like, well, I mean, he's been hurt a lot, but the good side is, well, he might actually be good. He's got some interesting repertoire.
Yeah, he's averaging 12 Ks per nine, so mm-hmm. you know, he's definitely a strikeout pitcher. His fastball is in the low 90s, as high as 94 he's been clocked at. Got a good curve, 73 to 75 miles an hour, so he really brings it down. It's one of my favorite. I love the north-south curve, and that's what his is. The bottom just drops right out of it. And some interesting things I found out about him when I was doing some research. First of all, the Diamondbacks signed him out of Taiwan in 2014 for $450,000 for the signing bonus. He was attending, get this, the National Taiwan University of Physical Education and Sport. I think that is completely awesome. This is a college that doesn't even pretend to be about higher learning.
I was going to say, do they even go to class?
I think, you know, this should catch on in the United States. First candidate I'm thinking of, Alabama. The Alabama University of Physical Education and Sport.
Oh, yeah.
Think about it, Max. Just think about it. And it was also interesting is that he was signed in 2014. I think he had a pretty good 2015.
Yeah.
In 2016, he had to go
the,
back.
He pitched in the Futures game.
Yeah. But in 2016, he had to go back to Taiwan for a required stint in the Taiwanese military. Yeah. So lost there. And then he had some nagging injuries. He only made two starts that season, and that's when they transitioned him to the bullpen. So definitely a bullpen guy. Not high hopes on him. You know, definitely not as a starter, but I think he could be a definite serviceable piece of a very successful bullpen. So I look forward to seeing more of him.
Yeah, definitely expecting to see him next year. Probably, right? I mean, you might have
seen
what you got.
I would think so.
Because he also is 24, which I still haven't gotten used to the, like, you know, how old is an old baseball player, you know, or an old minor leaguer. And, like, 24 in double A, like, it's time to get going, which is weird. But we'll probably see him soon.
Yeah. You know, I'm not as concerned when I see numbers like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, guys develop at different rates all the time. Obviously, wouldn't you love to have, you know, a catcher like Pudge in your system that's ready for the majors at age 19? Or Odor, he was 19 when he came up, right?
I think he was 20, but he was super
20?
Young.
Okay. Andrews, he was really young like that. I mean, yeah, so you've got some guys that, you know, they're just busting at the seams to make the majors at an early age. Other guys, they take more time, you know. Yeah. Nelson Cruz is a perfect example of
Nelson
that.
Nelson Cruz ruined everything about every prospect for me. even Ryan Rua, I'm like, well, hey, you know what? Like, Rua's like 26 or 27. What if next year's the year where he just drops like 35 home runs? Like, what if? I mean, Nelson Cruz did it, right? And then there you go.
Right.
Now I'm completely, like, drunk on Nelson Cruz. And when there's
only he has hit the most home runs in the majors in, the last 5 years or so. I mean, he is embarrassing the Rangers for giving up on him. I was so against them letting him go at the time when they did. And I get it. I understand it with the problem he had with PEDs. But really frustrating that he's still out there just clobbering the ball and just giving me nightmares.
He probably didn't even see that coming, though. I mean, he is a very good baseball player still. And good for him. And great for him, really. Because, and that's kind of, it's a sidetrack, but one of the things that I see when I see, you know, speaking of player ages, when a player is old-ish, you know, like on that kind of teetering around 30, like, I saw Tommy Pham the other day is like 30 years old, and he still has like 3 years left on his contract. And you go, man, you're a good player, and like, you have a lot to be proud of, and congrats on being a major league player. But like, you're probably not ever going to get the big payday that you deserve because of, you know, your age. And when you finally broke out, and good for Nelson Cruz for just kind of bucking that and saying, it doesn't matter, I'm still good, even if I'm 35 and doing that. So bizarre, but.
Just too bad that he's on the Mariners, which means he will never see the postseason ever again.
Oh, man. AJ Morris tweeted out the other day that Nelson Cruz is probably one of the best postseason hitters of all time. And he absolutely is right. Oh, that was so fun.
Yeah.
Oh, man, Nelson Cruz.
I remember tracking that when we were in the playoffs back in 2010 and 2011, that, you know, he was tracking to, I think, dang it. Is it Jackson that has the record for the most postseason home runs?
Oh, it's got
to
be.
But it looked like Nelson Cruz was going to catch him and pass him if he had stayed in the Rangers and we'd kept on that playoff trend. But alas, we all know.
But Ron Washington pulled Yu Darvish in the 2012 wildcard game, and we're done talking about that.
All right, so let's go into the next prospect that we just recently acquired, and let's talk about Tyler Thomas. What can you tell us about him?
So he also came from the Cubs. I find it interesting that we made two trades with the Cubs like within a week. We could have just kind of combined everything, but you know, this.
I think they're a great trade partner for us. I think that we match up well.
Yeah, yeah. And we talked about that too. Is that either when you're trading with Theo and this brilliant baseball executive, it's either because you guys are on the same level or because he's just fleecing you at every turn. He's like, guess who's on the phone right now? It's freaking John Daniels again. He wants to make a trade. What do you say? Let's ask for another Kyle Hendricks. Ha ha ha. But no. Cubs are a good trade partner. They're a quality team, quality franchise. Have a lot of good homegrown players that you kind of feel somewhat comfortable about, picking from, rather than a team like the Orioles or something who all pitchers from that team cuss them out once they leave. Another pitcher, which is a common theme with these trades, is acquiring all of these arms, because all it takes is a couple to hit, and guess what? You have a pitching staff, and you can win the World Series. It's that simple. He's left-handed, which is good. He's 22, is hanging out in Hickory so far. Kind of a similar profile from what I can tell to Raleigh Lacy, as far as just kind of being a common prospect. Again, not somebody that you're going to hang your hat on, but pitches well, seems to be a good athlete, and a couple of years away, three, 4 years away from the majors if he's going to make it. But it kind of has a future that you can hope for. And let's see, we had it over here. No, he doesn't.
While you're looking that up, I can say that we got him for Jesse Chavez. This was a throwaway player. True. It was a guy that we all hated at the beginning of the season, but then something clicked for him around Mother's Day. He dropped his arm down on one of his deliveries, and
you're right.
Boom. We end up getting something for him, which none of us in our wildest dreams thought we would ever be able to get anything except for a half-eaten sandwich for Jesse Chavez.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, no, great.
Good for Chavez, and good for us.
Yeah, that's something that's very important is looking that. Because if Tyler Thomas ever, makes it to AAA and goes to, the AAA All-Star game for, the Home Run Derby and is some guy's bullpen pitcher, batting practice pitcher, and the guy wins the Home Run Derby, that's a win for the trade. He doesn't have to amount to really much of anything. We got what we needed out of Jesse Chavez. He got what he needed out of us. And, we'll see if this can be our Kyle Hendricks. That's a very crude and lazy comparison just because of the team that we're trading with, but would be nice if we just kind of stole a nondescript prospect and he ended up being a Cy Young contender. So.
And Chavez, he went up a few notches in my eyes when I saw his parting gift to the Rangers players. He got them all royal blue bathrobes with their name and number on the back, looked just like the jersey. I thought
those were sweet.
I need one of those.
Those are really
definitely
cool.
Need one of those.
Yeah,
yeah.
And also so, Chavez apparently was a big advocate for bringing over Cole Hamels to Chicago. So kind of appreciate it.
He was. He helped validate the fact that the ballpark in Arlington is a bad place to pitch, and there was some relevance to the fact that Hamels was pitching so much better on the road. I think he had a 2.93 ERA on the road.
Wild, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think on this way out the door, Chavez helped us get a little bit more for Hamels, so kudos to him.
Yeah, for sure.
So the last guy we want to talk about, and this one was done a little bit earlier, when the Rangers decided to become a trade partner for San Francisco, where they really didn't offer anything to San Francisco. We offered a player to be named later or cash consideration, and we took on the contract basically of Austin Jackson and is Guerin the pitcher that we got on that one?
Yeah.
And then Jason Barr, he was the real prospect
that we paid for
in this trade. Yeah. And he was number 30 on San Francisco's list of their top 30 prospects. So not a high-end guy, but definitely not a a throwaway either.
Yeah, worth spending what, like roughly $5 million on, right?
Oh yeah, we just bought ourselves a prospect on that trade, which I was all in favor of. And it's seeing things like that where, you know, the club is constantly trying to improve and they're not afraid to spend some money. A fan of a team like Baltimore or Tampa or Seattle to a certain degree, they have to look at that and go, dang it, why can't my ownership group do that? So, you know, he's definitely had some upside. He is 23 years old. He's been assigned to Kinston with the dudes, the Down East Wood Ducks, as a right-handed pitcher. He was drafted by San Francisco in the fifth round in 2017, so pretty high round for a draft pick, and for San Francisco to just turn around 1 year later and offer him to us, I think says something. He's had a little bit of a rough start with the dudes since coming over in that trade. He's 0-2 with about a 4.73 ERA. He's only started three games, though. It's very early. He's going to be a guy. He's going to be in the low to mid-90s. He's got a four-seamer that goes 91 to 94, a two-seamer 90 to 92, a changeup 82 to 84, and a curveball 73 to 76. So he's going to change up the speed a lot, which is good. You know, he should be able to keep batters off their game by mixing up the speeds. He's been clocked as high as 96 in short stints, so he can rear back and really come at you with the fastball. But I think one of the big things for him is he's a control guy. His command profile is solid from what people have said about him. So he's got a high floor. He's got very little mileage on his arm. This is an interesting guy. He went to go play for the University of Central Florida, and started there in 2014 and was redshirted. Next year, he walked three batters and got two outs for the entire season, and he was cut the following year. And so they just gave up on him. But they brought in new coaches at Central Florida, and the new guys liked him and invited him back, and he walked on. And his changeup, that's his out pitch, and they were really fascinated by that. So so they let him back onto the team, and he blew them all away, blew away the scouts, and the Giants took him in the fifth round the next year. And the Giants, I think sometimes they're pretty good at recognizing good pitching talent for some reason. I don't know why that sticks with me, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, they had a lot of good guys coming up. Obviously, Bumgarner, Matt Cain.
The Freak.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh, you had to bring that up. I was thinking the other day, like, remember when it wasn't not that long ago at all that Tim Lincecum, a Ranger, was a thing?
Yeah.
Too bad it didn't work out.
It was short-lived.
Would have been fun.
It just would have added to the circus. Yeah. But
he was not doing good in AAA at all. I mean, it would have been a waste of everybody's time to bring him up. It just wasn't a fluke that he was just getting knocked around in Round Rock. But, yeah.
Well, and kudos to the Rangers for taking a risk on him. It was a low-risk deal. It was $1 million. But it just shows they're willing to try anything. Yeah. And they didn't go the freak show route. They could have brought him up and really embarrassed him, humiliated him. Just imagine a 12 or 13 ERA where he's just the laughingstock of Major League Baseball. I think it was the best for all parties involved. Probably. That he just kind of, you know, rode off into the sunset. So yeah. Hats off to you, Mr. Lincecum.
Wherever you are, hiding in.
Wherever you
are.
Somewhere
in the Pacific Northwest. There was an article written, I don't remember who wrote it. I think it might have been SB Nation, but I really don't remember. But it was a guy that basically went to Seattle area or wherever Lincecum lives and was just basically trying to find him. And because he has such a low profile that, like, even the people that are in his hometown and stuff, like, don't really know, or if they do know, then they don't care that he was, like, one of the best pitchers of this generation. And so, like, he actually found him, like, because he was about to leave this reporter and was eating at a restaurant and looked up and there was Tim Lincecum. And so he approached him and, you know, he was able to do a little bit of a profile on him. But, yeah, he strikes me as a person that is taking the post-baseball life pretty fine because he's got a lot of other stuff, a lot of personal interests and value.
Well, and he's got some personal demons with his brother ODing this year, too. I mean... Yeah. That could have been affecting his pitching
for sure
as much as anything else. So I wish nothing but the best for that guy. He just watching him from afar or kind of close when it was 2010.
Yeah,
I always rooted for the guy. If for no other reason, because he looked like the kid from Dazed and Confused.
Yeah, he was really good, really exciting, a lot of fun. I mean, he was just so fun. And super young, and for
just the unorthodox delivery. Yeah. I mean, just
I'm sure that he had many, many, many people tell him throughout his life that he was not going to make the high school team or make the college team or get drafted or all this kind of stuff, and he. I mean, just based off of his mechanics and his size, and he, again, one of the best pitchers of this generation, so good for him. And, hopefully nobody focuses on his Rangers part of his career and is just on the Giants thing.
Oh, I don't think anyone is going to have any memory of his Rangers career. Yeah. All right, so that does it for our discussion on the guys coming in.
Yep.
We purposely did not talk about how we should evaluate those trades, whether they were good for the Rangers, whether we were fleeced, or maybe the trades that weren't made. Beltre's still on the team. Right. Gallo's still on the team. We're going to postpone that discussion because, just a little tease, we're going to have a couple of guest appearances coming up. One just next week, next Thursday, when Mike Tepid is scheduled to join us.
Oh, yeah.
We're really excited about that. And
the GOAT.
And since Tepid, since he knows all things Frisco, it makes sense to talk about what these trades mean and how well the Rangers did. I want to tap so much into that because I really value his opinion. Anything he tweets, I take as the gospel. The guy knows what he's talking about, and so really excited about that. And we're also possibly a week from next Thursday, 2 weeks from tonight, we're planning to have one Dave Nichols join us. And if you don't know Dave, you should look him up on Twitter. He live tweets the Spokane Indians. And if you haven't been paying attention to our short season A team, they are doing some great things. There are some really, really exciting players that are playing down there. Super and I'm exciting. dying to talk to someone who's actually put eyes on these guys. And he's a very interesting guy, has some great takes on some of these guys. He gets to see Hans Kraus every 5 days. Mm-hmm. He gets to see the other guys whose names are escaping me, of course, because I don't have them written down.
Curtis Terry, right?
Curtis Terry, he could set a record for most home runs for Spokane this season. He's got 13 home runs so far, I think.
And who else? AJ Morris wrote a profile today on what's his name? Diosdobel Arias, something like that.
Yes, yes, and he's the guy that's the superstar that you know nothing about.
Is playing three different infield positions and is batting over 300. I think he's got like a 3-4-5 season going. And like, wait a minute, and we gave him $750,000 to sign out of Cuba. Like, wait a minute. He's supposed to be good. Why don't we know anything about him? Which is a great question. And it just gives you a picture of how loaded that Spokane team is. I think that there's a chance that this Spokane team gets looked back upon as the High Desert team from, what was it, 2012? That had like Gallo, Maz, Guzman, Nick Williams, Alfaro.
It's exactly like that. Rua. They've got five guys going to the All-Star game, which their All-Star game comes up, I think, in just like a week or so. So when we have Dave on...
Oh, yeah.
The All-Star game should have already been concluded, so we can talk to him about that. Something else to get excited about.
Yeah.
So,
future is bright for both this podcast and the Texas Rangers.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah.
So we got a 4-game series with Baltimore that's already started. Last I saw, the Rangers had scored 13 runs.
Ooh, on our way. We're halfway to 30-3.
Is it 15 now?
Oh, well, I mean, 13, I'm just rounding up. We're almost halfway.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. So I was going to preview the starters in the series. Got Gallardo versus Cashner, the battle of Rangers has-beens.
Man. There are not words to just say, like, Gallardo for the Rangers and Cashman for the Orioles. Do you want to go? You want to watch this game? You want to sit down for 3 hours and... cozy. You wanna take a shower and get in bed with a glass of red wine and watch that?
You might want to do a few.